I just wanna be a stupid hoe.
It's your best friend, the amateur blonde, Kelsey Pennywinkle, or Foxy Boggs, if you're a dirty little pervert. And welcome to the fifth episode of Bimbo Box. I have such an amazing guest. I say that every single time. Like, okay, just expect if they're guests, they're going to be amazing. So I think that's kind of the deal here. But my guest today is pretty much a Renaissance woman of just history and flavor and life experience. And I really appreciate my guest. Her name is A.G. Norton, and she has a project where she is breaking down the years of photographs she found from her father when during the pandemic she went through some stuff that was sitting around and found 600 photographs of the Playboy clubs in the 1970s where her father was heavily a member and photographing the history. I don't have that much to tell you that she can't tell you. So I'm just going to waste no time because I know that we're going to talk forever and I'm going to bring up my friend A.G. Norton. So welcome to the stage.
Yay.
Miss, hello.
Hello.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you. Yeah. So, and I love the Renaissance woman little compliment there. Thank you so much.
It's true though. Like you have so much. Just, it's like, I can't even start to even describe you because I want you to describe yourself because it's just so beautiful to hear you talk.
Well, I think the one thing that I could say that other people would often describe me as saying is that I am not boring, which is great. I'm glad that I'll never be considered boring. There's lots of, I'm like a human pocket knife and all the different lives I've had within my life. But yeah, so I was a social worker, still am a social worker. And during the pandemic, I was out of work. And so I started going through the things in my basement and I found 600 photos that my dad took at the Playboy Club in the 1970s in Vernon, New Jersey. And so I started scanning them and became really interested in who were the women in these photos, who were the men in these photos. Like my dad's pictures look very different from your traditional Playboy Club. He was not a professional photographer. He was he worked for the city. He was an engineer and he had six kids and he had mouths to feed. But his photography was his passion and he had a dark room and he would develop his work. And so his photos really show what it's like to be in the service industry. It's like women holding heavy trays and waiting for somebody to pay a bill and the bartenders that were there and the interplay between the bartenders and the patrons. And there's definitely, there's a part in my show where I talk about how I said to my mom, you know, Mom, why did Dad take so many pictures of the Playboy Club? And she says, your father was a boob man and came from a long line of boob men. And then I show a series of, 10 photos that are all just like tight boob shots. So there's definitely boob shots in there. It's kind of like, the honesty in the way that he took it too, is sort of priceless. And that it wasn't just that. It was like, yes, this is a place where you're seeing women owning their erotic capital and taking advantage of a situation where they were able to be a waitress and have a job and make money. When in the 1970s, there, like one lady said, look, I'd been pumping gas for a job on Route 23. Mm-hmm. And I read this job advertisement and I was like, I'm going to go and put a bunny suit on and make some decent money. And now she's a musician and she's, you know, it's like she sees it as this time in her life where she really enjoyed it. And it wasn't as though she couldn't call herself a feminist or that she somehow was like completely exploited. There are a lot of different stories and a lot of different narratives, and it's not one dimensional and it's not good or bad. It's like this was a part of history, and Playboy and Playboy clubs were a place where you could see entertainment. You could see, you know, my parents got to see like Richard Pryor perform and, you know, Sonny and Cher. Like people in New Jersey, you don't get that kind of talent in New Jersey anymore. Like you go into Manhattan if you want to see decent, like decent anything, really. I mean, unless you're looking at Atlantic City. So my parents really wanted to be able to expose themselves and my brothers and sisters, because I was like a bit younger, I didn't really go because by the time the Playboy Club opened, I was you know I it was, sorry, when it closed, I was born. So I was born in 1980. But yeah, it wasn't this, certainly the one that my parents went to, it was like a country club, essentially. You know, there were pools indoor and outdoor. And it was a place, you know, kind of a recreation and a fun. And so doing this project and interviewing people, I thought initially what I wanted to do was do a like a book. Like I was like, oh, won't this make a cool coffee table book? And I contacted so many different publishers and nobody got back to me. So I was like, all right, well, that's not gonna work. And then I thought, you know, okay, maybe I should make merch. But I felt like that was really one dimensional of like it doesn't really connect to audiences. Like I don't want just my dad's pictures on tea towels and stuff, right? Like that seems like, I don't know, kind of gauche. So then my friend was like, you know, you really need to just get these pictures in front of other artists. And I was like, okay, how am I going to do that? And so I, you know, contacted galleries, heard nothing back, and thought, all right, fuck it. I'm just going to do a slideshow. Like, I'm just
Right.
going to just project these images and bring them into spaces. And I've done now 49
Oh, wow.
slideshows
That's amazing. And
in.
who doesn't love a slideshow? People love slideshows. They're like a good old PowerPoint presentation. Like, we love that shit. So it's perfect. Like, you're a genius for that because as soon as I heard about the slideshow aspect, I was like, oh my God, yes. Because I'm always wanting to like get like sex workers together to do like slideshow or PowerPoint presentations on something. I think it's just so fucking fun. There's so much like comedy and just the taking it back from the educational institute and like making it like humanized. I love it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that it's like I call my show, it's called Dad, Playboy, and Me, not your average slideshow, but I describe it to people like it's a funny TED Talk. I'm like,
Right.
it's like, you know, TED Talks are great-ish. I think they're a little up themselves, at times, but whatever, that's my critique. Because I, you know, for me, when every slideshow I've ever done, they've all been different. I've had different, like I put in different slides or take out slides depending on what audience I'm going to. I've done it at retirement homes. I've done it in photography dark rooms. I've done it at a an after school club that I worked in for high schoolers. I've done it in the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. I've done it in Berlin. Like I've done it in all these different contexts. And so I like to tailor my material to the audience that's going to be in front of me. And it's a conversation. It's a like I am engaging with the audience throughout because I want it to feel like it's an in-person live experience that you can't just put on your phone and watch. Like there's an even we have a lot of that content. I want my shows to be an intimate. I want you to feel like you're in my living room and that you've met my family and that you've gone to
Right.
the Playboy Club.
Well, and people like to feel involved with things. I mean, I think by nature we want to see ourselves in something. And I think that's why we
Yes.
get so many people that are just like, oh yeah, you'll go mention something to somebody at the store and be like, oh, compliment somebody's necklace, and the lady behind you in line says, oh, I had a necklace like that. My husband, he died. And like, just like things like that. So people want to like understand like that and I think that that's a lot of times what's like lacking in like society today or like entertainment as a whole is like that involving the audience aspect. That's why people like Rocky Horror Picture Show is so timeless because it involves the audience. And so I love you for that. And I can't wait until someday I get the chance to come and see you do your thing because
Oh,
I like have
the bunny
been
bus is
tempted.
coming. The bunny bus is coming, and we're gonna get you on the bunny bus.
We're gonna hop aboard.
Yes.
You know, I am a cyber girl.
America.
I love Bunny for America. We bring back the bunny hop. You know, was the bunny hop created for the Playboy clubs, right?
That's such a good question. I really need to research the origin of that dance. I was just talking about that dance recently with my mom.
So I know how to do it.
I'm gonna.
I was taught in like the third grade at school. But yeah,
I've got good memories of that dance.
Yeah, it's
good. Two steps forward, one step back.
I love that so much. Gosh, what I really hope that the Playboy clubs get revived, because that would be so amazing, and just giving it back to the people that feel like they've been hurt by it, I think is a good way to kind of do it, is be more inclusive and things like that. We kind of discussed that for a minute before. We had such a good talk before we even went and started recording, you guys. So like, there's just like so much flow here and like information. So
I agree with the Playboy clubs. And I think what I loved about them, and what I agree with you about wanting to see something like that again, was that it brought a lifestyle together in a physical space. And so it wasn't just, you know, Playboy, you know, was great, obviously, for democratizing the female form, certainly a narrow idea of what women are supposed to look like, right? But nonetheless, allowing people to access pictures of nudes and saying that that's okay and making that culturally accessible. But it was also about entertainment. It was about art. I mean, the art director for Playboy, Art Paul, there's an amazing documentary about him. I don't know if you've checked it out, but he, Art Paul was the artist in charge of all of the visuals for Playboy. And it's why, and he came up with the bunny logo. And his wife was a photographer, and he had a fascinating life. And so in doing my research, you know, what I'm trying to explore is other people's narratives that are attached to this brand, right? And that there's all these loud voices competing for space in trying to define whether it was good or whether it was bad. And I kind of stay out of that debate. And what I try to do is like uplift voices like Zelda Wynn Valdez, who, you know, she was the first Black woman to open up her own store on Broadway in New York City. She was a fashion designer. She designed costumes for Ella Fitzgerald, for Sammy Davis Jr. Like, she was so important to the fashion industry and to the Black community. And she was commissioned by Playboy to help create the Playboy Bunny costume. And so all the costumes that were made for the clubs were made through her seamstresses. And I've been able to track down and interview her niece. And her niece lives down in Florida, and she's so wonderful, and talks about being this little girl and playing hopscotch outside her aunt's store and seeing Sammy Davis Jr. come in, you know, just like off the street. And then there were all these Playboy bunny tails everywhere. And so for me, it's like stories like that, that we don't, you know, in all of the Playboy culture that's out there right now, and the reality TV and all of that, it's like, I'm trying to find the authentic narratives and just shine a light on them. Because there's so much more than just the noise that's around the brand. And I think you totally get that. And that's why I feel like we connected.
And I think that my take is very unique because I'm very obviously invested in Bimbo Core, but I am empowered by it, where I know that that's a hot take. Also, a lot of women think that that's poisonous, or it's rooted in misogyny, but I think that it's really honestly opposite. It's using misogyny as like a superpower and kind of like dialing back and being smarter.
So subversive. Your use of Bimbo Core is so subversive. I love it.
I love it. I mean, it's really what it means to me. You know, I really played stupid in a lot of situations, and it got me a lot further. So, because low key, I knew everything and was seeing everything. So the thing about it is that my place is very unique because I'm very much like, I love the glitz, the glamour, the reality shows. I mean, I was a teenager in the early 2000s. And so I was consuming all of this. I mean, like I ached, had to have a Playboy bunny necklace. And, you know, I wasn't supposed to have that kind of stuff. Anna Nicole Smith was the first time I ever felt like representation as like a little fat girl. I was like, I love
you. I saw your earrings. I loved your earrings.
Yes. Yes. I put on, well, I only have one of them on because I was too lazy to go grab the other. So we're just like kind of, we're city loppering it, right?
Yeah.
And then I put this on my friend Holly, that's also a fellow Playboy historian. She gave me this. So I thought I'd wear it because they went. There's actually like a necklace that too. I have probably now probably like 10 different bunny necklaces because I love the comeback of it because then I'm getting to live the parts of like that I wanted to in those days. And you know, I've always kept that blonde aesthetic and I love that. And I think that those parts of it are pretty. But I think that it's been, you know, the balance of like the vapid with the history, because I think that there's room for both. And I feel like a lot of times though, the consumers of either side want to snuff out the complete picture of it. And so I guess my kind of take is to like embrace it as a whole, because Playboy empowered me from an early age. And I think that a lot of people, they hear like the girls, like you'll hear girls say, oh, I wanted to be a playmate. I saw like my dad's magazines. And I remember looking at them and stuff and they're like, that's wrong. But I don't think that that's wrong. That's a woman from a young age being able to claim her sexuality, her being like a woman. And just because you sexualized it didn't mean that it was that way for everybody that was consuming it. And really like the joke is, oh, I read the articles, but like the artistry of it all is just, it's perfect.
I mean, the articles like were groundbreaking and it was before the internet. So to publish
Twitter, Playboy was kind of like Twitter where people were sharing their like hot take kind of like, hey, this is where like Hunter S. Thompson was writing stuff. Like this is where like real like gritty journalism was taking place. And so for me, I collect the magazines because it's so crazy to even go look at the advertisements. It's a time capsule.
Oh yeah. The advertisements are wild. The advertisements are wild.
I always have a few Playboys handy wherever, you know, a lot of them are in. I'll grab my little crowned jewels that I have at least.
Nice. Today. Well, it's funny. I was speaking to a store owner who is in New Jersey and he sells like vinyl records and it's like a cool vintage shop. And he came to one of my shows and he said that he carries Playboy, like old Playboy, and sells them at his store. And he was like, it's so funny, but the highest like consumer of them is like 14, 15, 16-year-old girls. Like they're all high school girls who just like collect the old school Playboy. And I'm like, that to me, that makes complete sense. It's like they want to see the female form in like shot beautifully. And, you know, it's like, it's interesting and it's subversive and it's like, it's all of these, it's an interesting form of entertainment.
Right. So yeah. It's very much of its own. It's the only thing that ever existed that has been this. So I've got one of my Anna Nicole issues. This is actually a February issue. So I've got Red Hot Valentine from Anna Nicole Smith. I'm gonna have to do, so I am a cyber bunny, like I was telling you, and I just haven't had the time to really pour into that platform because I want to respect it personally. I don't want to just use it as another place. So I'm planning to recreate old Playboy shoots is how I'm going to do it, but as like a fat girl. So I think that'll be fun. Nice. This is also a really important one. This is Madonna.
No way. Oh my God. I love that.
1984. This issue was the last stapled issue of Playboy. So they went to the bound spine after this issue. So it even says our last stapled issue. It's a keeper.
Wow.
And Madonna's not even blonde. She's not even blonde in that. She's just still got like the, you know, she's hairy, very European with the, you know how Madonna was back
That's
then.
My favorite Madonna. That's my all Madonna's. That's my favorite.
Well, I grew up with Bedtime Stories Madonna. So like I got like the super like glitzy like bimbo-fied Madonna was and that was the first time I really like I had my sexual awakening to like Madonna and like Michael Jackson. Like I remember like listening to their songs and being like, "Oh, this does something for me." So shout out to Madonna. I've got, this is my personal favorite. I've got Lindsay Lohan's, her, I can't show it because I put the video on YouTube, but her spread, it's really nice. Her set that she did for the magazine, it's beautiful. It's very soft Hollywood glamour, but it's really dialed back with just the red silk underneath her and her platinum blonde hair and red lipstick.
Ooh, I want to find out who the photographer was for that.
And then I've got Drew Barrymore.
You have all the classics, dude.
I get the people that mean something to me that I find interested in. And I've been compared to Drew Barrymore since I was a kid. So I've always really like had that with her. So of course I had to have her Playboy.
My mom recently, I got a message from a guy that I went to high school with on Facebook, and I haven't talked to him in years. And he was like, mm-hmm. knew I'm doing this Playboy thing. So he was like, oh, do you want, I'm throwing out a bunch of Playboy. Do you want them? And I'm like, obviously, yes, I want them. So I sent my very Catholic mother, the address and was like, can you go to so-and-so's house and pick up these Playboy? So, you know, she was very kind and went and picked him up. And then she's like texting me like pictures of the, she's like, oh, I'm reading about, you know, this one about orgy. I was like, I don't need to hear about your orgy discovery, mom. But yeah, she's having this whole, you know, she's going to be 77. In February. But she, you know, she's still alive. My dad died when I was 16. So doing this show, and I've actually scanned 10,000 of his images. Wow. And so just 600 of that 10,000 are from Playboy. But it's, the show is really about me, you know, chasing the sense of intimacy with him, and trying to learn about him. And, you know, my mom met my dad when she was 16, and he died when she was 50, and he died when I was 16. So we kind of have this, I don't know, my mom and I have this like sort of strange relationship with loss, and me having like lost my dad when I was turning into a young woman. And I carried a lot of sorrow about him throughout my life, and really developed my approach to life based on the fact that I saw him die at 54, and like he never got his passport, and he never went to Ireland, and he never like I had just a list of things that he'd never got to do. And so at 22, I moved to London, and you know, I like attack life with this like I need to go see and do everything, and which is how I've ended up with 8 million different kinds of jobs and doing a slideshow, and you know, it's like
that's so me too.
But it's funny because now, having looked at 10,000 of my father's photos, I've had to rework a narrative and see how joyful his life really was, and mm-hmm. how he captured all of these moments of being a dad and just, you know, being a man and being somebody's soccer coach, or, you know, he literally just took pictures everywhere he went. And so we're not a very wealthy family, and I didn't gain a huge sort of inheritance when he passed away, but what I gained was such a wide sense of who he was and what he valued, and also the connection. So I'm interviewing people who went to the Playboy Club and remember my dad, and you know, are happy to have their photos. And yeah, it's a really beautiful project to be connecting with my dad. You know, he would have died 27 years ago this February. So, but I've never felt closer to him.
Right.
Which is really remarkable.
You're carrying on his legacy. Like, you're carrying it on for him. And that's so admirable. And your passion is just unmatched. I think that it's beautiful. And the fact that you're trying to find these people in these photographs, and it's something that, you know, a story could have been written about you. So, you know, it's just, it's beautiful. It's poetic. It's mushy and heart touching. And I love it.
Well, it's, you know, it's a lot of things. And it, and for me, you know, connecting to audiences and talking about my experience and my journey to healing and catharsis. And I, it's really in a way trying to talk, you know, and talking very privately about something that's very challenging. My hope is that other people take away, you know, we all inherit these complicated legacies, right? And we all are going to be leaving behind, you know, things intended and unintended behind us to our loved ones. And so it tries to be open some doors or some conversations for other people about their own relationship with loss. And my hope is that they find their own path to healing. You know, it's not saying you have to do it like this. It's saying this is what I did and this is what I gained from it. And I wish everyone else, anybody who's carrying around congested grief or sadness, that they're able to find their own way to creatively let that go. And yeah. So that's one of my hopes for the show anyway.
Well, I have no doubt in my mind that anything that you want, you will succeed in, because you're putting the hard work behind what you're doing. And, you know, as before we started recording, we were, you know, really leveling with each other on that, like exhaustion, that burnout, the non-paid labor, the just figuring stuff out and finding your place and, you know, the direction to make your dreams come true. And I like that we've been put on this path at the same time, you know, and meeting each other when we're both like trying to live our life to the fullest, like, and that's where I'm at, is like, I want to say yes to everything. I want to try it. Cause you know, I've been so heartbroken by doing what society said I was supposed to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, never had I had my soul snatched more than working in corporate America. And, so this is reclaiming my life.
I mean, they don't
pay us living wages no matter what. So you might as well just carve out your own way at this point. So that's what I'm doing. And goddamn, I made less than $100 this month, but I've made the most connections I've ever fucking made. And so, I mean, it's okay. Like, that's the realities of life as a sex worker, though, until you at least hit that point where you have like a brand that's like known and you have residual money just completely pouring through. I mean, I have sleepless nights where I'm up editing shit that nobody even fucking buys sometimes, you know, and it's hard. And, you know, the thing about what I do is, I've mentioned it on my podcast before, but I create custom videos. So everything I create has been paid for, but I'm talking about when I put my beautiful creations, people have spent a lot of money onto other platforms and they're just not appreciated and things like that. It's just, it hurts and it's hard, but you got to keep pushing because you got to find the place. And you know, the thing is that I just have such like an abundance in my life and opportunities and just connecting with other people. It makes it worth that $100 month I just had. So
totally. I mean, I agree with you. I think that there's a couple of things when you're deciding or when you find yourself in a position of being of trying to be a creator and an artist, is that you have to have a kind of pathological sense of belief in it.
Mm-hmm. Like, you gotta be like, delusional.
yeah. It's like, it's crazy how much you need to really, you know, like really, really, really believe in what you're doing, because I mean, the amount of emails that I don't hear back from people, even though, you know, people go, oh my God, your story's so amazing. And these pictures are so amazing. And it's like, but I like send it to something, an establishment or, you know, an institution or something, and like, just hear nothing. And so that can be hard. And then I meet what I felt this whole time, which is like little angels along the way, little other people, kindred spirits like yourself, and that make the journey worth it. And it's like, it's making those connections and it's finding joy and seeing, like, I see your hustle and I appreciate your hustle and I value the work that you do. And when you find that kind of communion in the world, that's the essence right there.
That's like, what it's all about. Exactly. So you said the little angels thing, which blows my fucking mind, because, okay, this is what I do. So I try to live my life because I'm not like religious, but I know a lot about religion and I know a lot about the Bible. I studied it a lot in college. All of my extra classes were philosophy or religious studies, like no in between. I think I did like abnormal psych, which is still kind of, yeah. So I have a theory. I call it my entertaining angels theory, where I just am kind and I always consistently think of, I think it's the story of like Sodom and Gomorrah, where the angels are going next door to all of the neighbors and they're trying to find someone to give them fucking water or something like that. And everybody's turning them away. And then the family lets them in and the angels divinely protect them from the smiting of the village, you know? And it's not about being protected by the smiting, because I think oftentimes to make moves, you have to be smited a lot. Honestly, I've been toppled off of my soapbox a million times, but I get the fuck back on it and I build it stronger. And that's what it takes to really just like to succeed in life, especially now when everybody has just something to offer and the internet makes everything so accessible and things like that. It's just, you got to carve your own way. And I entertain angels. I'm just kind because I always want to pour into other people. So I'm always willing to give water, you know, and eventually the angels, they present themselves. So same kind of on different paths of the angel thing, but similar because.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's like without the community around, you know, yeah. Like I've done 49 shows and I've had a little guest book that I've taken with me to every country and every show that I've done. And I invite people if they want to write a message. And I have just such gorgeous, I'm so blessed to have such gorgeous feedback about the insight and you know, how the story touched someone or what they learned, right? And so that to me is, you know, I don't judge, like right now, I think I have like less like 500 and something Instagram followers, right? It's like that's nothing, right? Like my personal account has more followers than my show account. And fucking bothered by it. I'm like, I don't care. This. I don't count my numbers. I don't count my success. My definition of success is not based on how many Instagram followers I have. I can't do that.
I preach this shit all the fucking time because listen, I'm in a multi-million-dollar network. I have under 10,000 followers on Instagram. I just reached 3,000 this week, which is fucking huge. Like, thing is that a lot of people, they value that number. Well, you could buy that number, but you can't buy the interaction. And remind yourself that there are 500 people in a room rooting for you. And that's a lot of fucking people. So it's all
no, but
that.
I mean, I agree, but it's just one indicator, right? Like, don't get me wrong. Like if I hit 1,000, like I'll be like, woohoo, like, you know, like I'm not discounting it, but I'm not saying I define my success based on an external, a factor. I experience success by something that I define. And that is a sense of connection and that what I'm doing has authenticity. And yeah, that's to me, like when I feel connected to the work and I connect with the audience, I don't need 1,000 people in my audience. If I'm connecting to enough people in the room, then that's great. That's why I'm doing what I'm doing. And that gives me a sense of success and gratitude. I mean, when I did the Edinburgh Fringe, I mean, like some nights I've got like a big audience, some nights I'm literally doing it in front of two people and I'm like, all right, this is your show. Like, what do you want to hear? Like you interrupt me, ask me questions. Like this is, you're getting a tailor-made service.
VIP. Yeah. That's exactly how I would handle it.
Yeah. And it wasn't like I felt, I wasn't like, I didn't have a sense of failure because I think it's an unhelpful position to take.
When you live life for yourself and you're just trying to impress you, there's really not any let down as much as, you know, when you live for other people in this world. I was very like much a deeply insecure person in my teenage years. And it's funny because starting doing meth really brought me to find myself. But like being, you know, a teenage meth addict, I really found my self-love and my confidence in those times of when I started smoking meth. And I'm not saying to smoke meth to find your confidence. It was just that I found who I was through struggling and really like seeing like the full spectrum of like experiences and knowing that I was kind of playing like a part and being able to be like, you know what? I'm fucking awesome. And it's like, you know, that, what's it called? The euphoria of being on a drug, obviously. But I never stopped that. Even when I quit doing that, it altered my self-love in the ways of seeing the different parts of society, I guess, that I had never really been exposed to, and realizing like it's so much more than just like what you perceive right in front of you. So fuck the followers. I the followers game. I don't do the numbers game. I've never been about the numbers game because I think it looks disingenuous. And I am very much about being authentic. Like that is the whole entire reason why I exist, is to like stand in my power of just being me and being messy and being amazing and all of the different pieces that come with the both sides of the spectrum, the good, bad, and the ugly. And I think that maybe is like, you know, when like I went through a lot this last year, and I was living out in the middle of nowhere in my luxury apartment that I was supposed to be managing, and I lost everything and lost my fiance and was all by myself and figuring out how to be an online sex worker when I was, you know, a cam girl originally. And it was just different, you know, like going, just building all of this. And I really felt like I was like, I would joke a lot and I'd say, you know, I'm like a bimbo Buddhist out here. Like I'm on a Buddhist retreat of like finding like that ego death and killing those parts of myself again, and reminding myself that like my experience is mine. And at the end of the day, like nobody else's perception has anything to do with me, because I perceive things all the time that aren't necessarily how they are. And so it's just like I had that bimbo enlightenment, because, you know, I'm wearing lingerie while I'm like, oh, my God, like I feel so like, you know, like, so it's just funny. Well, but,
you know, sex workers have been I've had a lot of great teachers in my life. And, you know, I would say the top three teachers I've had are.
We're on a cliffhanger. Who are they, AG? Come back to me. we'll do a little, shall I do a little dance while we're waiting for AG to come back? Let's give her a, let's try this. See, the thing about doing a podcast is that sometimes things go unexpectedly. But the great thing about it is that we're living in our authentic selves. So we're going to work with our messy internet, and we're going to figure out all of this stuff, and we'll go with it. So I'll take this moment just to touch with you guys on some things that I have started doing while we wait for AG to join me again. So I have started a partnership with a lovely, lovely publication that is all about alternative lifestyles. They are called ASN Magazine. And guys, they are creating this year in response to kind of the discriminatory practices and things that happen within our industry as sex workers. They're creating in their awards ceremonies this year category for BBW models. So that's really beautiful for so many things, because it's also going to usher in more inclusivity within the communities. And not only that, but they also plan on next year, after doing the BBW awards this year, they're going to also be adding a trans category. And so this means a lot to me. I really, really appreciate the fact that they saw what a lot of people were speaking out about and decided to do something about it. So I just wanted to let you guys know that that's happening, and to keep your eyes and your ears and your fingertips out to get ready to represent for yourselves, and also vote for your favorite BBW models to be able to actually have a beautiful acceptance moment of an award where they're actually going to feel represented. It's very, very important to me. So I just would really love for you guys to check out ASN Lifestyle Magazine. They are a digital publication, and also right now they are looking at selling advertising spots that are affordable for any type of budget within their digital publication. And so for $75 a month, and this is kind of a little shout out to my content creators on a budget, for $75 a month, you can get a business card sized advertisement in the publication for anything that you would like to advertise, whether you do something like sell, you know, socks, or you could even, you know, be just put up an ad for your website, or, you know, there's even people that are doing things like shows, like my friend AG here. And she could, you know, even advertise in there. So it's a lifestyle magazine. So it's not just a niche to the porn world. It's a lifestyle. So please check them out, give them a follow. And I'll be keeping you guys posted about my adventures with ASN and all of the great things that they are working on. So yes, ASN Lifestyle Magazine, they're committed to the lifestyle community. They are a arbitrator of style and taste, and they are the most forefront of trends is what it says here on their Instagram. So I'm getting to know them, and I want you guys to get to know them too. And it's pretty cool that we're going to have some new representation. And our friend AG is back.
Oh my god. So,
it worked out because I just kind of was like, hey, you know, I can use this to talk about my new partnership with ASN Magazine. So I was like, okay.
Good. So there was a little like commercial break.
It was. And like, hey, you guys, also that's not you know, I'm doing this because I believe in the brand. They're not paying me for my spots here. So that's as much as you need to know, is that this is some real shit that I'm co-signing. So check that off of the Foxy box. So we were talking about, can you remember where we're at?
I was talking about the teachers I've had in my life.
Teachers. Yes.
And I was saying people towards the end of their life, middle schoolers and sex workers. And there's, it's not a hierarchy. They've all taught me a lot, and they've all taught the same amount to me. But you know, I've had, I'm lucky to have multiple sex workers in my life, and the, you know, there's a lot that social workers and sex workers have in common, which, and I've been a social worker for 20 years. And one is which you get intimate with people really quickly. And you have to just kind of be able to read body language and engage with people, and you're constantly doing a risk assessment in your head, to make sure that you stay safe, and that, you know, that there are a percentage, unfortunately, of social workers and sex workers who don't make it out of people's houses every year. You know, unfortunately, there are murders that happen, but that the sex workers I've had in my life, and the grace and the compassion that they have in working with people who are often so in need of intimacy, whatever that looks like, emotional, mostly. it's mostly emotional labor. There's obviously physical aspects of it, but that, you know, I find that the grace and compassion and love that I've received and have learned from sex workers, as I'm will forever be in a position of gratitude for, and that, you know, I have burlesque performers and sex workers who will perform alongside me in the kind of cabaret versions of my show, and, you know, I've learned so much about performing through through watching their fabulous performances, but also this idea of them using their erotic capital as a form of activism, and of, you know, being on stage. And I've got one friend, Cheeky Love. She's amazing. She's a performer out in Berlin, and she'll do this one thing on stage sometimes where she'll make the whole crowd. She'll be like, "We're all gonna say no shame," and she like gets the entire audience to scream no shame, because, you know, we're born into these bodies and yet are so often stigmatized for whatever they look like. And and that, you know, what I feel like the shame that we receive is so often socially imposed. And so in order to remove that shame, You can't do it in isolation. You can't remove your shame on your own in your room by yourself. It's really hard to do that. And so being in community and everybody being on the same page and screaming out no shame and sharing in that uncloaking of the shame and ridding of the shame, that there's a divine spirit that comes through a performance like that. In all of the blessings I've had in doing this project and connecting with angels, I have to say that the burlesque community, sex worker community, stripper community, all however people choose to define themselves, because that can be a thing and I respect that. But I just think that the umbrella within those communities that I've been able to work alongside and learn from them and collaborate with people like yourself is a huge gift. So thank you for coming into my life and for inviting me into your space.
You're welcome. And shout out to all of the lovely ladies that are living their authenticity and providing a safe space for other people to be authentic.
Yes.
You know, sex workers are superheroes in a lot of ways because we deal with people's true self. And sometimes it can be really disheartening. And sometimes you have to try to allow yourself the grace of like getting a lesson out of it sometimes, or trying to like better yourself, your communication. So it's like constantly like a study of like human behavior. And I personally, I attract people that use my services that want more, you know, mushiness, more lovey-doveyness with what they're getting from me, because I'm helping them heal in a lot of ways. And I deal with a lot of people that are, you know, really like autistic or like maybe have like a disability, physical limitations, things like that. And I feel really proud of the work that I do because it's love. It's love what I'm giving these people. And, you know, it's giving them an opportunity to express themselves when they might not ever have that type of opportunity without a sex worker. And for me, like, it's life changing to have that realization that what you're doing really is changing the world. And so, you know, people would never, you know, there's always going to be people that would never accept that as a truth, but it is the truth. So yeah, it's a beautiful thing. And it really takes such like a good heart to be able to connect with people like that. And that's why there's that definite branch of like the social work and sex work. Like we're one and the same in a lot of ways. And
totally. And I think that, you know, from my point of view, the only responsibility that we have as a society, as a culture, is to make sure that people are making consensual choices, right? We want, you know, people need to be in positions where they feel like they're able to express what their consent is, and that the models of energy exchange, so talking about, you know, like money and labor, that there is an ethical balance. And that, so that it's not that, you know, I've got a lot of friends who work as strippers, and, you know, they go into their job having to pay a house fee.
Right.
So they pay the house, you know, $60, $80, $90 to start work. They turn up and hand money over to be able to start work. And I find that unethical. I find that's not an ethical form of business practice on the part of the business owner.
Well, and that's why unionizing is so important with sex work, and why I really am trying to push like the whole union and the things that I have going on, which haven't been completely put out yet because I want it to be perfect and exactly what we need before I roll it completely out. You know, that's why it's so important to have these types of conversations where we're like, hey, you know, like, why are we paying these house fees? Like, you're making all of this money off of everything else, you know, or like, why we're allowing entities like OnlyFans to exist within online sex work where they're taking a bigger cut than what we get. They're getting a lot of money. You know, I guess OnlyFans only takes 20%, but they're not pushing any traffic our way. They're a needless pimp. It's just an extra platform that is created less flow of the natural way of sex work. I mean, it's, and no offense to the men that are listening, because you know that I'm not about misandry. I am about true equality. But the problem is that men have put their hands out and they have started pimping women in every way that they can within these industries. And it's not men that are out there actually putting themselves in harm's way to protect women, because there are very good people with, you know, there can be good pimps, you know, but there are people, no matter what, that are just trying to make money off of the backs of other people. And it's so toxic, and that's where you lose the empowerment. It's funny because the men that demonize us for doing this type of work are the same men that make it not good for us. They're the reasons why they hate the things that are the way that they are, you know. And so that's what I really felt, that like ultimately, like, sex workers really need to like unionize and keep the money within ourselves. There should be collectives, you know, things like that.
Yeah. And I mean, and I would also say that it's not just men. It's well-intentioned feminist groups who think that what they're doing is preventing trafficking, and
yeah, the SMERFs and the TERFs and the bad feminists.
Yeah. And you know, the East London Stripper Collective in London. I lived in London for 15 years, and so I was familiar with and friends with the East London Stripper Collective, and they've done some really amazing politicizing of these exact issues. And my hope is that kind of movement does turn global, and that people who are choosing to profit off of their erotic capital, that we have systems to make sure that they are safe in doing so, and that there's an ethical way for erotic capital to be created and consumed. And we do not need to be in position setting people up to be, in shame, living in shame, which actually only ends up preventing people from accessing support services when they need them. So exactly. The shame and the stigma does really no good for anybody.
That's, I really think that the future of just humanity lies within just having collective consciousness and just that mindset of like pouring into each other. It's almost like that old school like barter system where we should just be like trading with each other for means of survival and figuring things out, pouring into each other's strengths, and just empowering each other as like a society. And it's,
I love you. You are like a bimbo Buddhist lover. You're like, we should just be exchanging things for things, but
well, I do hope
overthrow capitalism. I agree.
I hate it. Well, the last scene that I shot for BBW Adventures, I wore this necklace and it says "Eat the Rich." And I fucking mean that shit. So I mean, like, that's the thing, is I'm very anti-capitalist. I think that the world has lost meaning. It's all lost meaning, and we really need to like fall in love with each other again as like a society. Like, it's very important. Yay.
Well, I mean, it's been, yeah, totally. I mean, the idea that by choosing, so I, you know, keep on talking about how I was a social worker, but you know, I thought, all right, I have a career like a social worker, and that's a very like, you know, dutiful, heart on your sleeve, what a great profession, it's like a teacher kind of thing. And I thought somehow that was going to protect me from being exploited. And that's bullshit. And I was my labor and my emotional labor was completely exploited. And I wasn't, you know, protected or paid properly. And that doing performance art, I'm about the same of where I was financially. So it's like, no difference. And in this way, I'm choosing how I want to get fucked. It's like,
you sound so much like me. Oh my God. So I like quote myself, cause I just think that I'm so great. But all the time I will literally say I left the corporate world because I was in the luxury apartment game and I was sick and tired of, I say, I would rather fuck myself in front of the world for free for the rest of my life than to fuck over people for money behind closed doors. Same shit,
right? It's just like, all right, let's make some
choices. Social work, I mean, it's got to be really complicated because our system is so fucked up and it's rigged against people that don't have money. as a whole. And so it's like you really had to see a lot of injustices, I'm sure. Just, you know, I'm all for you doing your what you're doing because you're going to change the world. People like us are the people that have to change the world. Otherwise, it's going to not go very much further, guys. Like we're treading on every single part of the governments in any country really are really, really out of pocket. And we have so much more power than them. And you know, the thing about it is like, I'm supposed to be like a bimbo war general or something, but like, I'm just like, you know, like we should assemble as the people because like our military is also powered by the people. So like, you guys really think that our guys are gonna, nah, I don't think so. But that's me, my stupid bimbo self probably.
No, I mean, I think, and this is probably from having spent a lot of time with middle schoolers over the last 20 years, but, you know, kids are, you know, they demand authenticity because they can smell bullshit, right?
Yeah.
If you're in front of a classroom, forget it, especially after school. It's like, you're not a real teacher. And I'm like, yeah, I don't want to fucking be a real teacher. How about that? But, you know, I think that they are crying out for examples of real leadership in the world. And we really, it's like, who are we pointing to? Who are we pointing to right now on a global scale that we can say, here's an inspiration of somebody who's alive today, who's being a good, who examples of good leadership. It's like, there's only so many, like, you know, hey, here's some AOC. Like who is a real, who's actually demonstrating, and actually not even just who's demonstrating good leadership in politics that I align with. I'm saying actually, we don't need to have the same kind of politics, but at least I can have respect for the way in which you engage in debate. I can have respect how you engage in your civic responsibility. I might not agree with the content of what you're saying, but I agree that you're actually playing by a sense of rules that this government has to protect democracy. And we don't have that.
No, in a war American government, it's just completely insane the way that things are running because it's everything that we were against and why we were founded against these things. Like, but it's happening worse. So I try so hard to just not be like pissed about the injustices of the world and the downfall of society every day of my life. But it's so hard to like, I'm a political science major at the end of the day. Like I know enough about politics that I fucking hate them. And, you know, being involved was what got me to not want to be involved anymore. And so I'm like totally like trying to encourage people like, why are you voting this year? Why are we going to vote? Oh, you say you're going to vote third party. Oh, okay. Cause that's worked very well for us. It's going to be this year. It's going to happen. All of a sudden our two side democracy is going to all of a sudden, you know, let the third party win.
I think the points that we are making about the need for creative artistic voices, because that is where you will see some level of authenticity and leadership right. in whatever areas, you know, that we are. And I think that I look to you as like this authentic voice that, that people need to hear and be inspired by.
Well, I hope that I can be that guy. And I think I look to you as the same. I think you and I are going to create a change that we want to see. We will be the change.
We're the change. And we're going to do a smoking hot Playboy Club themed photo shoot.
Yes. Oh, it's going to be amazing. Yes.
It's going to be hot. It's going to be amazing.
Things are going to be fucking incredible. So just one thing that we just want to just touch on again real quick is just kind of resurgence of Playboy. So it's really sad to find that in December was the anniversary, the 70th anniversary of Playboy. And why did we not hear anything about these things?
Very, very disappointing.
All we hear about is just the gobbledygook, the Crystal Harris book, the fucking Holly and Bridget show, the fucking canceling of Hugh Hefner, the Playboy murders, which, like, that's so off base. Like, that has a lot of those are so reaching to even have any relevancy with Playboy. So, like, I am really sad at Playboy as a platform that they allowed this to happen. You know, I get their stuff advertised to me every single day. Why haven't I seen this?
Interesting. I mean, I don't get them. They don't advertise to me. And I'd love for them to advertise product to me because I'd be interested to see what their advertisements are like. But yeah, no,
it's
they're
a clothing catalog. It's a clothing catalog at this point. That's what it is. It's fucking Bobby socks with bunnies on them and fucking Hawaiian shirts. They did have, okay, so there's this shirt that Hef always wore that had all the magazine covers on it. It's like a button up. And they started selling that. And I was like, oh my God, I have to get one so bad. But yeah, they have the costumes, which I'm sure have just plummeted in quality.
Yeah, the quality I've heard is really bad. The quality of it's expensive and the quality isn't great.
Everything in a nutshell anymore, though. The apartments that I was selling that you could hear your neighbor take a shit in, but you're paying fucking $4,000 for it. Like, this is luxury, baby.
Yeah, so they turned 70 on December 1st, 2023, to very, very little fanfare. And I suspect that you're right. I think that they, as a brand, are trying to keep their legacy, the historical kind of legacy, on the DL. I think that, you know, they had the A&E documentary that came out, Secrets of Playboy, which I watched. And, you know, I thought that there were some really important narratives that got uncovered there, is what I would say. I don't necessarily think it was, I mean, that there was some light and shade to it. It wasn't all like trying to be one dimensional completely. And Playboy said, we stand behind these women's voices, and we're now, you know, no member of the Hefner family is longer a part of it. And I think that they've kind of lost their way a bit. I'd love to partner with them. I will say that I would love to be able to work with them in some way to actually look at their legacy and say it is complex and we're able to hold that complexity, that we don't need to say it was one dimensional. We don't have to say it was all bad or all good. You know,
all aspects should be honored in it, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And that's what makes the history so rich, is because the way that even this was founded was not good or pretty. I mean, it was really forged from something that was tried to be shut down a lot, and, you know, censorship and things like that. And it's kind of ironic that now the voice against censorship has fallen to just censorship of people's hurt feelings in a lot of ways, which people's stories are valid. I am all about the whole entire message of my podcast is to speak your truth, and I can hear all sides of it, and I'm going to respect it as long as you come respectfully. But it's washing away the rich history and the empowerment and all of it. And it's so sad. So, you know, maybe we can usher in the celebration for the next year of Playboy and the rich history and the ugly and the good and all of it.
I mean, I love the idea of seeing Playboy not necessarily even having a premises of clubs, but actually having like a traveling group of, you know, it's like basically like a festival. So just like,
oh my God, that's brilliant.
You know what I mean? Like, have a traveling festival that would come through different cities globally, and that you have queer talent, and you bring back that sense that Playboy wasn't just a magazine and it isn't just a fashion label. It's a lifestyle and it's an approach and it's a combination of art and entertainment and music. And it's like, it used to be cutting edge. And I want to see Playboy go back to that, to their roots. And yes, the Femlin. I want to see the Femlin.
We need to get, do you have tattoos? Fucking
love the Femlin. I want to get a Femlin tattoo.
I want to get a Femlin tattoo. Let's do it. When we meet for the first time, let's go get the Femlin tattoos.
Yes. I have no tattoos, by the way, but
that would be your perfect one.
It'll be my first and probably only, but I will definitely get a so gremlin iconic. Tattoo. I'm obsessed.
The
fact that
people
with
don't
them.
Even know about any of this. It's like the girlies would love the Femlin. Are you fucking kidding me? I have so much Femlin art. Like, I probably shouldn't blow up my spot right now, but I have it all on eBay in my cart and I'm just like waiting for my break so I can buy some originals. But the Femlin, the rich history, the, you know, let's look at these, just a couple of the snapshots from your slideshow real quick before we end. I love it. You know, I gotta grab them real quick. tell a story to the class real quick.
the artist who designed the Femlin, she was on the do not disturb signs for the hotel, and she was just this kind of like gremlin that was sexy, and it really embodied this kind of femininity that was allowing and saying like, you can be playful and you can be sexy and you can, and again, it's like decloaking of the shame of it. And it's like, it's normalized and it's okay. And it's a part of the sexual revolution. So I feel like I want to see Playboy come back to being able to bring that in-person cutting edge energy alongside things like the Femlin and their rich history with Art Paul I see that my hope is that when Playboy turns 75, that we'll be in a different place and we'll be celebrating what Playboy, right. Good parts of the legacy.
My laptop is being a little biatch. I'm trying to get these photos up. I want to show these snapshots so bad. But yeah, I love that you're the like only person that has actually known about the Femlin. Like, I had to educate Holly. And I was just like, this is the parts of the history, just the artistic, it's just so much. And I like every time on eBay I see like little heirlooms from the Playboy Club that are for sale, I'm always like, when I have a place again, because as I've explained, I've really minimized my lifestyle to try to reach my goals, which I think is also a sign that I'm enlightened. Not just to toot my own horn, honk my own titties there. But, you know, like I've really worked hard. And so I'm minimizing. But when I have an apartment again, goddamn, I'm going to have so much vintage Playboy Club stuff. I want to have like a whole like bar area. My friend Holly has the glasses.
Yeah, I've got like little glasses that have the Femlin on them. And then I have, my mom got me like a coffee carafe. And I hear you on the like little touches, the little.
Did your dad have any of that stuff from the clubs that you inherited?
No, I mean, my mom was a hoarder, low key, but she was. So it's sort of a miracle because when we sold that house that I grew up in, everything got thrown away. Like it was just like, we just need to chuck. And I was living in England at the time. So I wasn't really home to go through any of the stuff, but my brother saved all of my dad's, like the 10,000 photos. That was like the one thing, those boxes got put into his basement. And then they basically have been in basements for like 45 years. And then I unearthed them during the pandemic. It's remarkable because like everything else really kind of got thrown away in the process. So I don't really have any of my dad's like clothes or any of his mementos. I don't have his camera. So it was really just his photos that was like the one bit of inheritance, the one thing that we got left behind. Which was great because actually these pictures would have been, if I'd lived in London still, they were going to get thrown away. My brother was sick of holding on to them and his wife was just like, get rid of them. And he didn't have the time to go through them. So if I had been living in London still, they would have been destroyed. So it's everything, remarkable that the universe brought me back to America so I could bring my father's legacy to the world. So
you're supposed to bring Playboy back to America. Make Playboy great again, 2024.
Yes. Make Playboy great again. Make slideshows great again.
Yeah. Make bimboism empowering again, or for the first time. Well, I can't get my stuff to pull up those photos. So I guess that just means you guys are going to have to come and check out my friend's Not Your Average Slideshow Instagram and give her some follows and check her stuff out. And, do you have any final thoughts that you'd like to leave here today?
No, just that, you know, the plan is I'm going down to Florida. I'm going to be doing some shows down there. There's a museum called the Museum of Erotic Art, which I'm trying to partner with. Mm. We'll see if they get in touch with me. But yeah, the plan is the shows are going to
Seattle. I have something for you. We have to talk. Obviously, we still have to talk after this, but I have an idea for you because I'm trying to put my silent films in an erotic art thing. But there's one in Seattle that's coming up. And the deadline is on the 9th. But you should submit to do a presentation.
Oh, cool. Yes, please. Yeah. Send me the details. I'm looking for places out west. And the plan is I want to get a bunny bus and tour nationally and bring the slideshow and the Playboy photos and all of the stories to a place near you. So if people have ideas, they can DM me at Not Your Average Slideshow on Instagram. And the show is called Dad, Playboy, and Me. So thank you so much for your time and your beautiful conversation and your exchange. And thank you. And yeah, keep up the great work.
Thank you so much. And same to you. And thank you for your friendship and you know, hopping on the bunny bus with me. So
I'm going to give you a hug. I'm giving you a hug.
Bunny hug.
It's awesome. Thank you so much. This is my first ever podcast and you were such a wonderful host. Thank you so much.
I'm glad that you enjoyed it. And you know, I'm just going to pull you off the stage. So stick around for a few minutes if you don't mind. Yeah. Cause it takes me forever to upload. So this is so funny because it's becoming my closeout with every guest. Like, hey, why don't I pull you off stage and you hang out while I upload the episode. So, thank you. Thank you for getting to know my friends here on Bimbo Box. And, we'll definitely have you on again for sure. Yeah. There's so much to unpack. Okay, darling. We'll be back. Thank you. So I really hope that you guys enjoyed that. I feel like that was such an amazing conversation in so many different levels. And, you know, when people try to, I guess my final thought, Foxy's final thought is when people try to, take away the historical pieces of something that exists, you lose the art behind it. And there's always this saying that I've heard that, like, you have to be able to separate the art from the artist. And I think that by separating ourselves from the history of Playboy, we're taking away the things that the women were empowered by and the things that make us as a consciousness, as like female empowered people that are living in their existence as a woman. We're taking away our history by not listening to this stuff. And so that's kind of the final thought that I just want to leave you guys with is just be mindful because stories are those of the storyteller. And by shutting down the storyteller, then you're losing the stories. So be kind to each other and, you know, just be good and love each other and love yourself. So I'm Foxy Box, Kelsey Pennywinkle, signing off.
Bimbo Box is part of the Outside the Box Productions universe. Don't forget to think outside of the box. Like, subscribe, share, and turn on those notifications.